This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I'll Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And welcome to our once-a-month edition of Sminty Fiction. This is a very special one. This is the last chapter, maybe? It might be split into two. But it's the last chapter of Terminus. We're finally going to get some answers around here. And Terminus is a continuing story that we've been doing, I think, for over a year.
Is it? Really? Wow.
I'm not sure. We've been doing it for a long time.
For a minute, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like 12.2, and there were multiple 0.2s. I'm excited to share the conclusion with all of you. As I said, this one's continuing. We do have some standalones, and some of them were running as classics this month because they're Halloween kind of based. And then there is a second and third installment. So don't worry. I hope you're enjoying it because it's going to keep going. But yes, we are reaching an ending of sort for this first part. And I really love sharing it with all of you. I've loved hearing from all of you, even if it was just like, hey, I like this. Because I wrote this in 2010 as part of NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. And it's been interesting to reread it now that over a decade has passed and just be like, what was going on here? What was I thinking? What was in my mind that I wrote this? I will say this one continues to highlight my fixation on maps. Wow, did I do a lot of research for that? I think that was when I was playing Fallout, and Fallout like had very accurate maps. Or that's what I read somewhere, and I think I got in my head. I need to have an accurate map, or everyone would be like, "That's not what Washington D.C. looks like." It also continues to showcase what I was just really thinking about motherhood at this time, and what that looks like, and trauma. I would say. It continues to feel kind of reminiscent to The Last of Us, but once again, The Last of Us didn't come out until 2013. So
They copied you.
That's right. Somehow they got a copy of this story. They were like, aha, this is what we'll do. So content warning for this. Viruses, toxic religion, which fits in well with our recent wrapped up miniseries on religion.
Finally.
I think probably around the same path.
Probably.
Yeah. Violence, implied sexual assaults, ableism, and unhealthy thoughts about illness, trauma around motherhood. Maybe not the best coping mechanisms. Like there's a part of the end, especially where I was like, that's, I don't know that you should be thinking like that. And I wrote it, so it's probably something to do with me. Slut shaming, And I think that's it. But always let me know if I missed something. And here's our recap before we launch into this final chapter. A virus has killed off most of humanity, making it nearly impossible to have children. And because of this, the population has massively decreased, and the state and the religious organization arm that is closely affiliated with the state have taken control of all of society, and they have made these conception centers, and they are in control of children and child rearing. Our main character, Tilda, got pregnant outside of conception center illegally, is now on the run with her child, Madison. They are hunted as a priority number one case by the enforcers who work for the state. After many close calls, Tilda and Madison met up with the resistance, where they learned there was a vaccine, but the state had destroyed all but one. After getting the info and killing someone in defense, Tilda and Madison are on their way to D.C., the heart of where their enemies are, but also where the vaccine is. And she's very determined to give Madison this vaccine. So that is where we are. Yeah. So please enjoy.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money, so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Tilda shrugged off her pack, thankful she'd picked it up during their rush to leave the Liberty Memorial, and fished out some almonds and granola for them to snack on, and some stale water to wash it down. The scenery shifted from flat plains to rolling fields of green, trees with only a few browning leaves fluttering on them. The further south they went, the more foliage still clung to the branches, shades of orange, reds, and yellows, smudging together as they barreled past. The sky was a pale crystal blue, an almost full moon already visible in the afternoon, semi-transparent in the light. Tilda studied the map the man had given her, folding it and unfolding it and refolding it and unfolding it again, anxious, doing her best to memorize it. When she replaced it for the third time, her fingers touched the corner of the map Lynn had parted to her, and something like nostalgia flickered throughout her. It was like remembering another life, when she'd been hopeful that she would find a safe haven and a cure with some mystical, all-powerful resistance. She and Madison chatted some, subdued. Tilda tried to draw him out, get him to laugh, but to no avail. She told him stories, ones her mother had told to her, recounted to him some of the sciences her father had taught her until her voice went hoarse, and while he listened, She could tell by the worried twisting of his hands that he would not be distracted, couldn't take his mind from the dark and stormy future that awaited them. Tilda reached out and stilled his twisting hands with her own, kissing them gently. Remembering the blanket folded up in her pack, she tugged it free and wrapped it around them, giving up on talking, letting the clack of the wheels on the tracks and hum of the engine fill the vacuum left by their silence. Tilda dreamt, a half-dream that existed in the space between sleep and wakefulness. She was walking home, scuffing bright red trainers along the concrete. A different route today. A longer one, through abandoned parking garages with the shells of cars and overturned shopping carts. Soon she'd be going away to a conception center. 10 years she would stay there, not seeing her family, having no choice in a partner, like an animal to be bred. The whole thing made her sick. The rattle of metal. The scraping of rock. Tilda kept glancing behind her, hearing noises and then convincing herself that she hadn't. Walking faster now, wishing she hadn't taken such a secluded route, she thought she saw a man. Blonde hair, blue-eyed. But she was imagining things. Until she wasn't. Warm breath on her neck, fingernails digging into her arms, her screams echoing unheard in man-made caverns of a dying civilization. Was there anyone left to hear? Was she dreaming? She started awake, a scream lodged in her throat. Madison leaned against her, absent-mindedly drawing pictures in the dust. Tears rolled down her cheeks. She swiped at them, denying them their existence. Wincing at the stiffness in her back, she swallowed back her grief, unnerved. Madison raised his eyes to hers and she ruffled his mousy hair. He didn't smile, solemn eyes staring up at her. Stretching her back, Tilda craned her neck to glimpse out the open car door. Night was falling, pinpricks of stars twinkling in the sky. She could see a river snaking through the countryside, rolling fields with orchards at the edges of the horizon, giving way to solitary buildings and industrial yards. The train was slowing. Tilda twisted, looking down the line of carriages. A train yard loomed ahead, interspaced with gaping tunnels, wide mouths of pitch black swallowing the front cars in the darkness. Recalling the instructions of the man from Chicago, Tilda stood, helping Madison to his feet. They both stretched and walked out the numbness of their legs. Tilda jogged in place to get the blood flowing back into them, preparing to run. As it entered the graveyard of its brethren, the train slowed even further. Tilda scooped Madison in her arms and jumped down, right foot crossing over her left, unused to solid ground. She quickly righted herself, doing a survey of the train yard and finding a line of disused trains at the edge of the field to her right. Looking around to make sure no one was watching, Tilda stole forward to their destination, trying to ignore the voice in her head naming this a suicide, a beating drum growing louder and louder. The air was warmer here, but not by much. In the distance, she could make out a series of oddly shaped buildings, domes and spires and columns and large triangular roofs. And there were lights, more than Tilda had ever seen. This was the last bastion, the only city left on the continent that still functioned with a semblance of normalcy. She shimmied between trains, stepping over cables and pipes, dirt crunching beneath her boots. Her pack snagged on a jagged piece of metal, ripping through the fabric. But she didn't slow. Tilda passed through rows of trains, the train they'd just been on grinding to a whining halt, a shot of adrenaline as Tilda climbed over a connector. The line of abandoned trains led to a tunnel, the same that the man had told her about. A bulb flickered, shedding dim light on a pale green door on the tunnel's right side. Tilda jogged for the door, grateful to be obscured from view, the wind carrying voices from the emptying train. Setting Madison on his feet, she fiddled with the handle only to find it locked. Glancing around frantically, she found a large-sized rock and hefted it into her hands, bringing it down hard on the handle. She felt it give and toss the rock to the side. This time, when she tested it, the door opened, releasing a puff of dust and stale air. Tilda peered inside, listening, looking for anything dangerous. Once she deemed it safe, as far as she could tell, she guided a frightened Madison inside and followed behind him, the thunking of the door as it shut reverberating in the enclosed space. They found themselves in a large tunnel, steel tracks running through the center, dark except for the red and white lanterns casting weak light from where they hung, strung along the stone walls on either side. A green-tiled plaque with white lettering placed over the door read, Rockville. The name rung familiar. Tilda recalled it from the map, top left corner. Something like claustrophobia quickened Tilden's breath, but she swallowed it down. They had a long way to go in this shadowy tunnel. She hoped that Arm taking one vial of the vaccine for themselves meant that they didn't intend to destroy it. Stay behind me, Tilda told Madison in a hushed tone, taking his hand. Their footsteps smacked loudly in the silence, echoing in the heavy dark. Somehow, the dank tunnel gave Tilda the same feel of a sanctuary, a place of sacred, listening silence, where any sort of noise above a whisper was profane. She attributed it to the dark and the quiet, the same sensation of judgment of being watched and wrongdoing. Together, they trekked through the tunnels, stepping over puddles and bits of rocks and twisted metal, jumping over missing sections of the low ledge, freezing so simultaneously at the sound of rats navigating their way through the tracks it might have been comical. Apart from being stale, the air was cold and thick with dust. Doors popped up on either side of the tunnel, hallways branching off to the equipment rooms or chain-linked fences. But Tilda ignored them, instead watching for the green plaques. Twin Brook, White Flint, Strathmore. When they passed these signs, platforms rose above them like cliffs or subterranean cities. Occasionally they'd pass a section of roof caved in, and they could see a patch of star-speckled sky or another tunnel spanning above them. Time stretched, unraveling in the dark and the silent. They followed the red lines for miles, passing Friendship Heights, DuPont Circle, and Farragut, where several tunnels snaked off in opposite directions and their pathway fell away. They hopped down to the track using the rails of the red line for their guide, carefully navigating over the metal crossbeams. Stairs led to a platform over them, and Tilda had the sudden horrific vision of the floor above collapsing, forever entombing them. Orange and blue tracks crossed over the red, and Tilda slowed subconsciously, something instinctive telling her that they were getting closer. Madison stared up and around the enormous room, intercut with staircases dissecting staircases, towering over them, a chapel with arched ceilings. Trying to make as little noise as possible, they gingerly placed their feet. The dust muffled the crunching of pebbles under their shoes. The rails for the red line veered sharply to the left, and Tilda followed them, past a sign for McPherson Square, bathed in red light.
Please, let's go back, Madison begged her in a whisper. I don't want to do this. Please, please, let's go back.
Tilda squeezed his hand, wanting to turn around herself, a caustic terror eating through her veins. She prayed inwardly, invoking whoever would listen in this imitation of a sanctuary. Madison stopped, pulling Tilda up short. She turned to him and her breath caught at the pure grief and terror on his small face, one so filled with trust in her. His bottom lip trembled, tears collecting at the corner of his eyes, so round and scared and pleading with her. She knelt in front of him, cupping either side of his face, brushing the fringe from his eyes and using her thumb to wipe away a stray tear. She pressed her forehead against his. I haven't done much right by you, she confessed, her whisper loud in the silent tunnel. I need to do something right. Madison made a sound of distress and confusion. Do you know how I got my name? Madison sniffled, shaking his head. My mother chose it because it means battle. She had to fight to keep me, just like I'm going to fight for you. They're going to kill you and take me away. I'll never see you again, he whispered desperately, urgently. Tilda pursed her lips together, throat tense and eyes stinging. She pushed back so she could look into his hazel eyes, almost drowned, suffocated, strangled by her love for him. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry we have to do this. But we have to do this. Why? Madison tangled his fingers in her hair. Because it's a chance for you to have a better future. And I'm going to take it.
Madison hugged her fiercely then, and she returned it, never wanting to let him go. But she released him. She stood. He wiped his face. I love you. No matter what happens. Never forget that, okay? She held his face for a long moment, and he gave a slow nod. All right, Tilda rose. Let's go. She retook his hand and they started again. A plaque along the tunnel read Metro Center. Tilda wished the journey had taken longer. There were four hallways, two on either side of the tunnel. Each had a sign above the door indicating street corners, exit ways, platforms. They had to hop down and cross the rail for the one the man had told her to take. Franconia, service exit. Tilda paused in front of the door. For some reason, the look on her mother's face when she discovered her daughter was pregnant surfaced in the chaos of her thoughts. Tilda had never found the courage to explain, had never told anyone. What did her mother think of her, she wondered. The giver of life or the slut? Tilda shouldered the door. It opened to a small room lined with metal pipes and bunches of frayed wires of reds, yellows, blues, greens. On the wall to their right was a basic metal ladder ascending in the darkness to a trap door, only visible by lines of light in the shape of a square leaking through the panel. As there was nowhere else to go, Tilda assumed that they had to take this ladder up to ARM headquarters. Can you climb? She asked Madison, and he looked at the door they came through, twisting his hands together. He turned back to her, shoulders hunched. She stepped on the first rung, raising her eyebrows at him. Resigned, he hung his head, shuffling over to her. Tilda hoisted herself up, boots clanging loudly against the metal in the silence. Behind her, she could hear Madison slipping on the rungs, hitting them with the toes of his shoes. Tilda couldn't help but grimace at every bang. When she reached the top, she wrapped one arm around the metal bar to leverage herself. With her other hand, she pushed up against the door, finding it heavier than she expected. Or it's locked, she thought grimly, repositioning her feet. This time, with the aid of her legs, she pushed again and the door gave, snapping upright. It almost closed on them again, and Tilda had to use her hand to steady it, almost losing her balance in the process. Panting, she heaved herself up and out of the square opening, pulling herself into a different world. Metal shelves of tools lined the walls, two big electronic boxes humming and flashing to her immediate right. Fluorescent light cast a stark pall on the room. She turned and stuck her hand back down into the blackness, helping Madison climb out, birthing him from the dark. He fell against her, blinking owlishly. Reaching over, Tilda pulled Madison's feet free from the door and eased it shut. Tilda couldn't hear anything over the hum of the machinery. When she pictured ARM headquarters, this wasn't what came to mind. Teal-colored walls, black wires sprouting from a hole in the floor and running along the edge of the wall where it met the floor, a messy assortment of tools along the shelves. The harsh light was right on, though. Tilda held out her hand and Madison took it instinctively, going to her side. Together they crept toward the door at the back of the long room. Tilda pressed her ear against the plain gray door, still unable to hear anything. Grasping the handle, she eased it down with bated breath. It opened with a click and Tilda cracked it open, looking through the sliver of space. Outside, she could see a well-lit hallway, soft light emanating from ornate fixtures on the ceilings. The walls were panes of mahogany, the carpets a diamond pattern of burgundy and brown, none of it at all matching the room in which they had emerged. Did a lot of houses reside above the subway tunnels and have entrances into underground worlds in their back rooms? The door jerked open, yanking her hand still attached to the handle with it. Gasping, she released it as if burned, stumbling back and falling hard into a metal shelving, rattling the tools. A man strode in after her, gun aimed at her chest. He had the ARM insignia across his bicep, a one-winged angel with a torch emitting bands of light. His lips quirked, and Tilda felt a thrill of memory at the blonde buzz cut and steel blue eyes. We've been looking for you for a long time. Tilda panted harshly, fighting to get her breathing under control. She wished she'd at least had a chance at finding the vaccine. Let's go. Aaron and Darla want to meet you. He gestured with his weapon out into the hall. When she made no move to obey, he reached forward and grabbed her arm, shoving her out the door. She rammed into the opposite wall. Madison cried out, stumbling after her, clinging to her hand. Madison's distress cut through Tilda's nauseating fear, and she straightened her back, pulled him closer to her side. The man kept his gun trained on her, hovering behind her. "Move," he commanded. Taking deep breaths with great effort, Tilda tentatively traversed the hallway. At its end, it opened into an enormous room, a wide staircase winding along the wood-paned floors. The stairs themselves matched, shiny wood visible on the outsides of the red carpeting down the center of the steps. The room itself was furnished with antique furniture that matched the floor and embellished with lantern light fixtures and paintings. A massive crystal chandelier hung from the ceiling, glinting with the soft light. It looked more like a mansion than any sort of headquarters. Several men and women occupied the wide room and the floors above, some cleaning weapons, others conversing quietly, the arm insignia around all of their biceps. As Tilda and Madison passed, taking tiny steps to delay the inevitable as long as possible, movement and conversation halted, eyes fixed on them, heads twisting to watch their progress. Tilda felt that they held witness to her execution. "Up," the man barked behind her. Madison tripped over the first stair, his legs shaking badly. Tilda assisted him to his feet, and he took the stairs carefully, pausing after each step. Their captor sighed in frustration, but otherwise let Madison set the pace for their procession. More heads turned when they reached the second landing, one woman actually halting abruptly, goggling at Madison, who hid his face in Tilda's jacket. Tilda did her best to glare at those so openly watching them, but her own shaking dampened the effect. The man herded them around the hallway, past wooden doors with old-fashioned handles, to the next staircase, and they proceeded to the top floor, making an already grim situation much grimmer in Tilda's view. Escaping from the ground floor was one thing. From the third floor, with dozens of armed opponents between them and the exit? Nigh impossible. The third floor only had three doors, in contrast to the multitude of rooms on the first and second, two regular-sized doors and a large double between them. Tilda furtively glanced over the varnished railing to the floors below, confirming to herself a jump from here would most likely be fatal. At the very least, she wouldn't be able to get up and walk. The house itself was really quite beautiful, she mused, and then had to stop herself from laughing aloud at the inane observation. "Stay where you are," the man growled once they were outside the set of double doors. Keeping the gun aimed at Tilda's chest, he strode forward and rapped sharply on the wood with his knuckles. A muffled response came from inside, and he pushed the door open with one hand, eyes darting between Tilda and whoever resided behind the door. Tilda glanced around, lips numb and limbs like lifeless wax. Her legs twitched, itching with the urge to run and watery with panic at the same time. Her body felt like a cage, a prison designed specifically for her. Soon she would be gone, and her body a vacant thing without purpose. After a brief and quiet conversation, the contents of which Tilda did not catch, the man turned back to Tilda and Madison, jerking with his head for them to enter. Madison resisted at first, tears clinging to his long eyelashes, but Tilda coaxed him forward, hoping against every rational part of her being that there was still a chance for them to escape this. The room was quite spacious, similarly decorated to the rest of the mansion, with the addition of scores of books on wooden shelves, a rectangular desk with two monitors, and a silver standalone microphone and a pair of beautifully painted windows shrouded by cream-colored curtains. A bundle of black wires ran from the modems under the desk and into the floor, where Tilda assumed they traced along the edges of the wall. A man perched on the outer edge of the desk, a gun held loosely in his hand, his well-lined angular face and graying hair making him look older than he was. Next to him stood a woman with platinum hair pulled back in a ponytail, pale blue eyes and an already pale face, making her appear washed out. Both had applied powder to their face in an attempt to mask their sores. In Till's opinion, it just gave them a superficiality, like they were wind-up dolls masquerading as humans. And both of them couldn't take their eyes from Madison, where he sought shelter against her side. and Tilda couldn't keep her eyes from straying to the gun. "Leave us, Thomas," the man instructed, a soft quality to his voice, a voice Tilda recognized. Still, he remained transfixed by Madison. Tilda heard the door shut behind them and silence encapsulated them. The woman was crying, Tilda realized, her hands pressed to her mouth and tears streaming from the corner of her eyes, taking with them some of the skin-toned powder caked on her face. She appeared to be restraining herself from moving, a stone in her apparent grief. "Do you know who I am?" the man put forth calmly, and Tilda nodded. "And my wife." Tilda shook her head again. "Aaron and Darla Delane, leaders of ARM, the voices of the broadcast." Tilda eyed the computers and microphones behind them, wondering feverishly if her mother had sat in that very chair to transmit her plea for Tilda to come home. "Well, for the sake of politeness, I am Aaron Delane, and this is my wife, Darla." Darla was visibly pulling herself together. "And we, of course, know who you are, Tilda and Madison Noen. We've been searching for a long time, waiting for this moment." He paused, straightening yet somehow looking more relaxed. "It's a pleasure to finally meet you both." That last comment was softened, directed towards Madison in an effort to draw him from his hiding place. Their complete disregard for her, as if Madison was the only other person in the room, made her uncomfortable. Darla spoke, her voice thick with emotion. "You can come out, child. No one's going to hurt you." If anything, Madison held more tightly to Tilda. "I just want to see you. Please, let me look at you." But Madison didn't move, cowering away from the two scrutinizing him. "You've brainwashed him," the man stated simply, pinning Tilda with cool, accusing eyes. Throat dry, Tilda struggled to swallow. "Why?" she forced out. "Why have you been looking for us? Priority," her voice cracked, "number one." Aaron exhaled deeply, once again focusing on Madison. "Because you kidnapped our grandson." Tilda felt like she'd run full force into a brick wall, her lungs spasming, the words like poison, stripping her of functionality. She couldn't accept his words as truth. They didn't make sense. "Our son John is this boy's father." Tilda shook her head numbly. She tried so hard to forget the day of Madison's conception, to pretend there was no father. Reality was falling back to her. She did not want to confront this now. She didn't have the strength. Sniffling, Darla said, "He didn't tell us at first, but we saw the sores. We pressed him. He confessed." Darla's voice wobbled dangerously over the word, drawing a shaking breath and gathering herself. She continued, "Confessed. He confessed what he had done." "We disowned him," Aaron informed her in a deadened voice. "He's under house arrest for his sin. He has been punished." Darla adopted a stony expression next to him, and Tilda could not help but being reminded of what she strove so valiantly to forget. A man with Darla's blonde hair and pale eyes, Aaron's heavy brow and angular features, advancing on her. "He told us your name. We had the Atlanta enforcers bring you into a conception center. We didn't want anyone to know what our son had done. We kept his name out of the records, and you never offered any information on the identity of your attacker, but for obvious reasons, we were very interested in your pregnancy. Didn't you ever wonder how the state found out you were pregnant?" Tilda didn't respond. At the time, she'd been so terrified, she just assumed they were all knowing. "Madison was born premature," Darla spoke in a clipped manner, relating events Tilda remembered from another lifetime. "For his health, we kept you around to help nurse him. It was one of the biggest mistakes we ever made," she spat acidly. "You stole him from us. You had no right to him." Aaron stroked his wife's arm, but she jerked away, shouting, "He's named after my father." Tilda had never known where the name came from. They didn't let her choose it, just handed them back to her with a name. You kept us from our grandson for 6 years. Who knows what damage you've wrought? Aaron curled his lip at her in disgust, grip tightening around his weapon. Darla tried again to cajole Madison. You're safe now, baby. Please come to me. She held out her arms, pleading with the boy who so studiously ignored her. Do you have the vaccine? Tilda almost wished they'd say no to spare her from the decision she would have to make if they said yes. Yes. We saved one to give to Madison, Aaron replied. Tears leaked down Tilda's cheeks, one dripping off of her nose. Why did you destroy the rest of them? She gasped. Why? Because the disease was created to purge the humanity of their filth. Created? Created. Tilda stared at him in growing horror. Yes. The state sanctioned the creation of HSV-5 to help control the overpopulation problem. Aaron laughed grimly. It worked. After a fashion. And God will grant us the cure when we are pure, Darla proclaimed. Tilda wanted to scream. She wanted to break things, to pound her fist against polished mahogany until blood stained the wood and her fingers broke, scratch off the makeup caked on the faces of those who would dare judge her after what they had done. But instead, she choked out. But you saved one. Two, Aaron corrected. One for our grandson, and one to replicate for our future family. He stood abruptly, bending over and opening a safe in the back corner. Tilda heard him snap open two locks. A beat later, they clicked back into place and he shut the safe, a syringe of clear liquid in one hand, the gun in the other. Tilda's breath caught, staring at the needle. She always knew this was a possibility. Losing Madison to get him the vaccine. Licking her lips, she asked, "How do I know it works?" You may be a sorry excuse for a mother, but I am not, Darla hissed. We would never inject our grandson with something dangerous. This is the vaccine for the virus. Even you can't be so selfish as to deny him that. Tilda set her jaw. Slowly, eyes never straying from the leader's arm, she knelt down in front of Madison. Hey, she whispered. He tried to bury his head into her neck, but she cupped his cheek. She could hear Darla gasp sharply at her first glimpse of Madison's face. He's beautiful, she breathed. Aaron, look at him. You need to let them give you the vaccine, okay? She whispered, the weight of her words heavy in the stillness, knowing this was the last conversation she'd have with Madison and trying not to know it. Madison shook his head vehemently. No, listen. It's going to be okay. But you have to do this. You have to be brave. They'll never let me see you again, Madison wept. Tilda took a steadying breath, hot tears inching down her face. She pressed her forehead against his. Darla sucked in a harsh breath. I'll always be your mother, and I will always love you. You have to do this. Madison, if you come here and let me give you the vaccine, I'll let you visit your mother, Aaron bargained. Madison stared at him, searching. Aaron nodded coaxingly. It will only hurt a bit, Darla promised. Biting back sobs, Tilda turned him from her and gave him a gentle push forward. Madison made an instant move to retreat back to her, but she shook her head. The small movement monumental, costing her everything she had left. Hazel eyes radiated hurt and fear, his waif-like body trembling badly. Darla cooed at him, her face glowing with awe and happiness. Tilda felt as though she was fading away, her essence floating out of her skin and dissipating, particles of dust to be scattered and forgotten. Aaron held his hand out for Madison's arm, which he reluctantly offered. Carefully, Aaron took the stick-thin arm in his, pushing up the sleeve of his jacket and flipping it over his arm so the pale skin of his underarm faced up. He smiled widely at the child, attempting to comfort but badly out of practice. Darla petted his hair skittishly, almost fearful of her ability to handle her grandchild now that he was finally before her. Madison whimpered and Tilda's hands twitched convulsively. "It's okay," Aaron assured him, flicking the syringe to rid it of any air bubbles and removing the cap from the needle. "Just hold still. Think of happy things. That's what my parents used to tell me when I was sick." Gripping the tiny wrist, Aaron pierced a vein near the underside of his elbow. The child tensed as Aaron pushed the plunger, face screwing up. Soon enough, Aaron pulled the needle free and Darla stepped forward, covering the puncture with a bandage. She pecked his cheek. "All done, sweetheart." Madison jerked away, running back to Tilda. Darla stretched her arm out to catch him with a cry of dismay, but he darted out of her reach. "Madison, honey, you belong with us. With your grandparents." "No," Madison shrieked. "I want to stay with Tilda. She's my mother and I love her." "You don't belong with that woman, Madison. You belong in a safe, loving environment with adults who can care for you." Aaron could not completely mask his frustration. I'll tell everyone what you did," Madison threatened. Aaron's face twitched angrily. "Come here and we'll talk about it. I promise you'll be happier with us. I won't ask again." Madison didn't move. "Bring him to me," Aaron commanded. Tilda was paralyzed, something momentous in the air. Immovable objects and unstoppable forces. "We love you more than anything." Darla held out her arms for him. "You're bad people and I'll never love you," Madison screamed, and Tilda's mouth fell open in shock. "You brainwashing bitch," Aaron shouted, advancing and raising his gun level with her. "No," Darla shouted, darting forward. The gun fired. Tilda jerked, eyes slamming shut. An animal cry shredded through the air. Opening her eyes, Tilda blinked. Aaron fell to his knees, pressing his hands over his wife's chest. Blood stained her silk shirt, red blossoming on white, her eyes glazed and arms twitching. Aaron sobbed her name brokenly, tears snaking around the bumps caused by his sores. Unthinking, Tilda took Madison's hand and sprinted behind the desk. She studied the equipment, searching, overloaded by all the wires and buttons. A red button on the screen caught her attention like a beacon. Hands shaking and clumsy, she fumbled on the microphone and armed the monitors. With an air of recklessness, she bent down so her mouth hovered over the microphone, moused the cursor over the red button labeled "Broadcast to All Receivers," and clicked. Something hummed to life. Tilda didn't know if it worked, if anyone could hear her, but she spoke, words tumbling from her lips before she knew what they would be. "There is a vaccine for HSV-5. At ARM headquarters in a vault on the third floor, ARM destroyed the rest of the vaccines. The state created HSV-5, but there is one vaccine left." She broke off as the door slammed open, Thomas taking in the scene with wild eyes. When his gaze landed on Tilda, he let out a primal scream and shot at her. She ducked, shielding Madison as the glass from the window exploded out, one piece slicing into Tilda's shoulder. Screaming, she crawled to the window, looking out either side. Spotting a trellis, she gestured for Madison to climb on her back. He complied, wrapping his legs around her waist and winding his arms around her back. There was more shouting. Holding onto the wall, Tilda eased out the window, placing her feet in the wooden footholds. The trellis creaked, the nails straining away from the wall, but held her weight. Tilda climbed down, her feet fumbling with the diamond-patterned woodwork, Madison's grip so tight around her neck she had difficulty drawing breath. The sound of Aaron's broken sobbing from above them made her skin crawl. She felt as though she was entering a different world, one of darkness and wilderness and quiet, instead of the loud, bright chaos they'd just left. The windows she'd passed as she climbed down like portholes into a world hurtling away from her, a world starving to swallow them up and take them with it. Soon after they passed the second floor windows, a piece of wood under Tilda's foot snapped and they plummeted to the ground. Tilda managed to turn mid-fall so they landed on their sides in the grass and thankfully soft dirt. Winded, Tilda rolled onto her knees, Madison sliding off her back. "You okay?" she gasped. He nodded, cradling his arm to his chest. A shadow cast by the light coming from the window they'd just climbed from stirred Tilda to action. Coughing, she shoved herself to her feet and grabbed Madison's hand, jogging stiltedly through the grass, away from the house. Glancing over her shoulder, she saw the dark silhouette of Thomas leaning out the window, watching her flight, his gun half-raised in uncertainty. But Tilda didn't stop, didn't flinch. She ran. Unable to process all that she had learned, everything that had happened, a live omission she'd fabricated all these years, unraveling. All of this was happening on the surface of her mind. Past crumbling monuments, statues missing limbs, fallen columns, caved-in domes, they ran. Ornate buildings cracked, faded, what was beautiful now ominous and sad, chunks of stone scattered across the street. They were almost free of the grid-like layout of the streets when a rover barreled towards them. Tilda slipped on the pavement, her breath hitching. She made to turn down a side street, but the vehicle didn't even slow as it passed them. DC came alive, lights blazing, cars speeding past, voices and electricity, a still-functioning heart in a dying body. Tilda didn't stop to fathom on what she had put in motion, on what it would mean for the future. Nothing mattered but getting Madison free of this. The city fell away. Through design, Tilda had led them away from the main highways to a battered road snaking alongside a river, an orb of silver shimmering on the water's surface. In the quiet, Tilda could hear Madison's gasping breath over the frogs and owls and cicadas, reeds rustling in the soft wind. Though no words passed between them, Tilda and Madison both skidded to a stop simultaneously, bent over at the waist, panting. An indeterminate amount of time passed, the river murmuring as they caught their breath. Mother and son mirrored each other, hunched over, heaving. Cicadas hummed all around them. Water murmured. The burn faded and her breath returned. She straightened, taking Madison's hand, and they walked along the river, DC a backdrop behind them, a grim amusement park against the inky black sky enveloping them. They walked away from the shattered pieces of society, all that remained of what they were, and into the wilderness. Thoughts fuzzy and unformed, vague notions of taking Madison to meet her parents, gave way to her grasping something that had been niggling at the back of her brain without her even realizing it. Madison had yet to point out any of the wildlife around them. It was so unkeeping with him that she faltered her step. Tilda squeezed his hand inquisitively, and his face turned up to hers, deep in thought. Half afraid to ask, she prompted, "What are you thinking about?" She expected questions about his father, his grandparents, the future, but she didn't get any of that. "Where did my name come from?" Tilda stared into his hazel eyes, moonlight dancing off of them, and fell down a rabbit hole of memories. She remembered the isolation, the nurses, cold, taking vitals, making sure she ate correctly, the constant corrosive fear as her stomach expanded and she felt tiny feet kicking inside her. Her door was locked. She tried it. Two enforcers stood guard outside. She twisted her hands. Screaming and pain. No one comforted her. The baby was out of her and gone before she could see clearly, before she was entirely sure she was alive. But they brought him back. He was tiny. Tilda was scared, terrified to hold him. But she did, arms shaking as the nurses taught her, clinical, how to feed him. They took him away and brought him back. No words, no explanation. Her fear left her. She craved the feel of him in her arms, his wide round eyes blinking around the room and settling on her face, hazel orbs absent of the judgment she got from everyone else, just curious, trusting. She loved him. Loved him so powerfully, so strongly, that everything else felt dim, far away. She hated when they took him away. He was hers. And when he was gone, it left a gaping chasm in her side. "What's his name?" she finally asked, rocking him in her arms, taking in the tuft of brown hair and tiny fingers wrapping around her thumb. Madison. No reason why. They had given him a name, didn't even consult her, didn't even tell her. Just took away her baby and named him, waiting until he was healthy enough to be given to someone else. The nurses wanted him healthy. They were afraid of separating him from his mother until his lungs matured. A year passed, every day her love flourishing, exponential growth coupled with the desperate horror of the day when the nurses would not bring him back. He had trouble sleeping, waking every couple of hours shrieking. So they brought him to Tilda, who would rock him to sleep and stay with him as he slumbered. He slept better with Tilda, so they let him. One night, Tilda waited until the guard, only one at night, had wandered off in search of snacks or to stave off boredom or something else so small and unimportant and significant and crucial. But Tilda had been testing the door. It wasn't locked anymore. Laziness or forgetfulness, such a tiny thing. She crept into the hall holding Madison to her, a weight in her arms as well as on her shoulders, just the right amount to tip her over the edge. The courage or the audacity or whatever that made people tick to do things that they do, to start a journey of hunger and cold and dark, insecurity and uncertainty. Her birthright. She smashed the glass over the emergency switch and yanked it down. An obnoxious siren and flashing light flared to life. In all the confusion, she took the emergency staircase, surrounded by mothers and nurses and doctors, keeping herself at the fringe and slipping away once they were outside and sprouting theories, speculating as Tilda summoned the fortitude to turn her back on them and walk into the unknown with a baby she didn't know, didn't believe she could care for, but could not separate from her very being. The shades of feelings, doubt, self-hatred, inadequacies threatened to flood her senses. But Madison's hand anchored her. For the first time in her life, Tilda truly felt like a mother. A sense of serenity pervaded her senses. She smiled as the knot in her stomach she'd grown accustomed to loosened, and she sighed in rapturous relief. Madison watched her with expectant eyes. "The nurses told me your name. I guess Darla gave it to you." Nibbling his lip, Madison pressed, "What would you have named me?" Tilda stopped, slowly kneeling before him. Her eyes drank him in, studying, scrutinizing, memorizing. With her fingers, she traced his eyebrows, his nose, his jawline, his ear. She tipped up his chin and tugged a strand of his hair, all while Madison watched her, anxiously awaiting the verdict, as though this was a test that he needed to pass. That something so horrendous could lead to the creation of something so beautiful. So perfect. Tentatively, he reached out with his own fingers, trailing them over the sores on her cheeks. Tears streamed from her eyes, the moonlight making them tiny crystals. Tilda brought her other hand up and cupped his face. "I can't think of a name good enough," she admitted with a breathy laugh. Madison sobbed, and she hugged him tightly to her. After a long moment, they stood. A bird glided past the moon and over the river, racing its reflection. Tilda didn't know the consequences of her actions, didn't know what the future held for the human race and how she had shaped it. She couldn't know that at that very moment, the tide was shifting, people were mobilizing. Violence would come first, then hope. Her shoulder ached from where the glass had sliced it, but it would heal. Tilda took Madison's hand. They walked, following the road into the night.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And that brings us to the end of part one. As I said, I did end up writing two more books in this series, which we will share. Both of them are shorter, though. They still were NaNoWriMo books, so they must have fit that criteria, but they're shorter than this one. I had a lot of steam on this one. The next two, I was like, oh.
I am intrigued that you did a trilogy here.
Yeah, I did a trilogy, which sometimes when you learn there's like a second one, you're like, oh, no, wait, I thought it wrapped up kind of nicely. What? Like, yes, there are two more.
Wow.
Yeah, but I can definitely see... It was something when I was reading this, I was like, okay, as I was going over this chapter. And a lot of times Christina gets like my live reaction when I'm reading it, like, oh, no, forgot about that. That I was trying to deal with my own traumas and insecurities. And I was really projecting onto this main character. And this idea that we've talked about a lot about motherhood and being the perfect mother and feeling like a mother. Or not, because that's what the character was going through this whole time, is feeling like she's not a mother, which I have not had kids. So it's fascinating to me that that's what I wrote. But we do see that everywhere. And genres like this, like horror, this is more of a thriller, but you do see it all over the place. But I just, it gave me pause where I was like, oh, so I thought like that would be how you be the perfect mother. Or like, I don't know. It was interesting. It was interesting. So... just to keep that in mind, I did write it right out of college, and I didn't edit it. I'm not saying it's, like, horrible, but there were just some lines in there I was like, ooh. I feel like this is kind of, like, toxic thinking that I was framing as, like, a positive type of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But we all learn and we grow, right?
That's
I've come
right.
a long way since
Things
then.
Change.
This is right when I started the show, the same year I wrote this. So I was in the process of great change. But yeah, I don't know if we're going to take a break or launch right into the next one. But as always, if you have any suggestions for things we can do that are in the public domain that might be fun, because we do like doing these. They are more work. Christina is a wizard and has made this possible. So thank you, thank you, thank mm-hmm, you, Christina. Mm-hmm. But if you have any, we do like doing them. They are fun. They're a way we can mix some things up. So let us know. You can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at StuffMomNeverToldYou. We have a TeePublic store and we have a book that got published that you can read. You can find it at stuffyoushouldreadbooks.com. Thanks as always, yes, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening and for coming along this ride.
Yay.
Yeah. Steph Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.